Hey everyone, Attorney Jerry Bosch here with Bosch Law Firm and WorkCompExperts.com. For almost 30 years, we've represented Minnesotans just like you all over the great state of Minnesota to guarantee they've been treated fairly and with respect when they've suffered a work-related injury. A work injury can change your life in an instant. You need someone on your side who can help you focus on getting back on your feet and getting paid while you do. You may be entitled to medical benefits, wage loss benefits, job placement, retraining, and payment for permanent disability. To make sure you are being paid all the work comp benefits you're entitled to, please call the attorneys at Bosch Law Firm. The call is always free, and there's never a fee unless we recover benefits on your behalf. Call 651-333-8300, Bosch Law Firm, or visit us at WorkCompExperts.com.
Welcome back to Worst Seats in the House. Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta, come to you live from Elsie's in front of a live studio audience tonight, night before Anthony and I leave for Anaheim, which I'm really excited about, Anthony. Next live show, Monday night, quick turnaround, October 18th, 7 p.m., right back here at Elsie's. So if you're listening to this podcast and didn't come down here tonight, you have absolutely no excuse not to come Monday night. So we could talk, we'll dissect the first two road games of the season and advance the home opener against the Winnipeg Jets.
And break down our first road trip in a year and a half.
Yep, exactly. We'll check our blood alcohol level. It'll probably be down by then. It's a legal limit at least. I was telling somebody the other day, I'm like, oh, this is the beginning. You're going to have to.
Well, not to add any worry, which I know you don't typically worry about things.
No, I never worry.
But Friday night's game is not on Bally Sports North, so I'll fly to Anaheim tomorrow, and then we can just go out and do whatever we want tomorrow night because I don't have to do a game on Friday.
Yeah,
I just have to make sure Saturday I can think. So,
That is. Will you even come to the Anaheim game? Well, you have to because you have to take the bus up after
right.
the game.
Yeah.
I'm even doing that. I'm doing like one of those late checkouts, and then I'm driving up after I write, just so I don't have to fight traffic the next day. So it'll be fun just to get on the road again and be back to some normalcy. Somewhat normalcy, but it'll be cool to get back and to sort of the scene of the crime, right? Doesn't it feel like even that the last time you and I were at Anaheim, who the heck knew when Kevin Fiala scored that game-winning overtime goal that we wouldn't see each other again until the bubble?
Yeah, right. It is unbelievable, but it just, to me, this whole lead-up to this season hasn't felt normal. It hasn't felt real, and I think tomorrow when you go to practice, head to the airport, get on the plane like we always used to do, that'll be the moment where it feels like, all right, now it's back. Hockey's back, and let's go. I wish we were calling the game on Friday night. It always feels so weird to go to these games, have it be opening night, and just doesn't feel like it's really opening night yet when you're just sitting and watching the game.
Yeah.
But
well, you can make yourself useful and run quotes for me after the game. That'd be
sure.
nice.
Happy to help.
Yeah, I think so, and maybe even write my story.
Anybody can blog.
I think any fan of the Athletic subscriber will embrace that vacation of having to read somebody else other than me. But really exciting. I mean, I was up in Duluth the last couple days for their team building trip. Marcus Foligno was even saying yesterday, Anthony, that it's just a weird time. Like the team, and this is something they will have to get out of their heads on Friday, is like the Wild are sort of like in vacation mode. Like, they're up in a team-building trip while everybody else in the league is starting to play games. It's just a strange feeling. And they really had their last quality practice on Sunday because they practiced at home on Sunday and Dean skated the heck out of them. They bussed up to Duluth. Monday was just a total, like, off day, team-building, bonding, jumping Lake Superior, 20 guys in a sauna, that type of stuff, team dinners. And then on Tuesday, they practiced, but it was more of a fun practice, Amsoil Arena, not a lot of structure to it. Today was a day off, which is Wednesday. Thursday, as you know, the day before a long flight to Anaheim, it's not going to be a crazy practice. So really, it's going to be 5 days since a real true quality practice when they hit the ice against the Anaheim Ducks, who have already played one game by them. So the Wild are going to have to wake up quick.
Yeah, and the Kings, the same thing. Obviously, it'll be the second game for the Wild, but back-to-backs where the Kings will have been on a normal schedule playing off night game. And it is strange when you're watching games last night, watching games tonight, knowing that it's still a couple nights away from the opener for Minnesota. I mean, it's a challenge, but everybody's on different schedules every year, and somebody's got to deal with it. I don't think that's going to be a major factor.
Yeah, it will be a major factor in my story in some way or other, whether they win or lose.
And then it's a major factor.
They either overcame all this adversity or they did not.
Right.
So, again, we're at Elsie's here. Tim Tuttle, thanks for having us out here to your awesome, awesome establishment. Again, Monday night, 7 o'clock, we'll be here again. There was a microphone right in front of Anthony's Venti Americano with an extra shot. And if you want to come up, ask a question about the Wild or the NHL or whatever Anthony's making for dinner, come on up and then walk over right over there to Joe at Grain Belt, and you can register for 2 free tickets to a suite at an upcoming Gopher game. If you ask 2 questions, you could fill out 2 drawings and just keep on padding that thing until you come away with a couple Gopher tickets.
So before we get to questions, and we want to hear from you guys, we might as well take a moment to – even though it's a day into the season – we'll make predictions for the divisions. We do this, you and I have done this like on the side each year, but we'll do it for the record this time. And so as long as we've only got one day's worth of games, it seems like it's still fair to call it. So give me your picks for, I'll write mine down too, with the teams that will make the playoffs, all right? So, they're back to the normal divisions now.
Oh, you mean like a total,
teams that will make the playoffs.
Okay, starting in the West?
We'll start on the East, because that way we'll end with the Central.
Okay, let me go to the
So if
East.
You start in the Atlantic Division.
Thanks for, by the way, the warning that we're doing this.
Now I don't know. I just thought about it.
I've got to figure out what the names of the divisions are.
Well, the Atlantic, that's the Tampa, Florida division.
All right, this is a good one. I think the Penguins are going to win the Cup after last night. No.
Right.
Carolina is making the playoffs. Islanders are making the playoffs.
You're in the wrong division. That's the Metro.
We're going the Metro?
Yeah. All right. The Atlantic
Bruins
division.
Are making the playoffs. Sabres are going to wind up with the number one overall pick. Florida's making the playoffs. Toronto's making the playoffs. Tampa's making the playoffs. We'll come back if there's going to be a fifth team. In the Metro, I got Carolina. We'll go the Islanders. We'll go the Rangers. So that gets us to 7. So we brings Flyers,
I'll just take
Caps.
Notes for you. This will be like when you're writing your story in Anaheim.
Flyers, Caps. So we got the Canadians. We'll go with, I think the Caps are going to take a step back this year. You know what? I'm going to go with the Carter Hart rebound because I picked him in my other fantasy league. We're going to go with the Flyers.
All right. So you're going to give me division winners?
We'll go with the Islanders. And we will go with the Florida Panthers.
All right. So I've got Tampa and the Islanders winning the divisions. And the only playoff team I've got different is I've got Washington. You have the Rangers.
Okay.
I've got Carolina and Philly. I've got Florida, Boston, and Toronto in that order in the Atlantic.
Nice.
All right.
So now this is going to be the interesting one.
We'll go the Pacific first. All right. Give me your order of finish for teams that will be in the playoffs in the Pacific.
Vegas, Edmonton. I kind of want to go with the Kings. I just don't know about Cal Peterson. What do you think of Calgary?
I've got Calgary as my third team, but you can't copy me.
All right, I'll go with L.A.
All right, L.A. Interesting that because I watched a preview show the other night, and these were all the Canadian guys. They had Seattle as their third playoff team out of the Pacific.
It's such a crummy division.
Yeah, well, no, but they had them as the third team, and
right.
I just don't see it. I've got Calgary third. You've got LA third. We both agree there's only going to be 3 playoff teams from the Pacific.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so now give me your central picks.
Colorado's going to run away with the division. Winnipeg, Minnesota, Dallas, and I will go with the surprise pick of the Blackhawks.
Okay, well, it's not that big of a surprise because I have Chicago fifth also.
But so I have St. Louis
fourth. You have Dallas fourth. So that's the only.
So Dallas is the one team? All right, remember all this.
I got it written down.
Yeah, because the thing with Anthony is sometimes he could be forgetful.
Right.
Yeah. So there's ours.
You guys
can come up and tell. Let's just talk a little bit about everything that went on in training camp, starting with Brandon Duhamel. And you and I have been talking about this the last couple of weeks that we started to get the sense that, especially when they took Rem Pitlick off waivers, that most likely Adam Beckman, Matt Boldy, and Marco Rossi would start in the minors. Obviously, Matt Boldy was helped that way with the injury, the unfortunate injury with a couple minutes left
in
his last preseason.
Yeah, I think Boldy's an interesting call because I'm not so sure he wouldn't have made it, but it was clear the other two guys were not. Well, it's possible, but it was still up for debate because, and you could tell even by the way he was being used.
Yeah.
They were trying to play him with Kevin Fiala and Freddie Gaudreau, and you're not going to keep running a guy out in that same spot if you don't think it's a possible fit for him. And, you know, I thought his camp was terrific. I thought he looked like he belonged. You know, we won't know, and who knows when he comes back. You know, obviously he's going to start in Iowa when he comes back. But Duhaime seemed like a guy that just was the best fit for the role they needed even though he's unlikely to play, I think, Friday night in Anaheim.
You really think that? I think Duhaime debuts Friday.
Yeah.
I think Pitlick's out, and Victor Rask is in.
I would guess that Rask is in, yeah. So then it's got to be one of Pitlick or Duhaime that plays, and just based on where they're trying to fit him, I mean, I suppose you could play Rask on that spot with Fiala and Gaudreau.
I think that's what's going to happen.
Yep. Duhaime earned it. He had a great camp.
Yeah. And Duhaime, I mean, I think the Wild fans are going to really fall for this kid. I mean, you know, he is not your typical fourth liner. I think that he is going to earn his way up the lineup. I think he could play in any position. Bill Guerin, when you talk to him, you could feel that he does not think that this is just going to be a future fourth line guy. He's got hands. He could fly. He's physical. He's from Florida.
But didn't you think that was the case with all four of those guys?
Yeah.
I mean, this was what was fun about this camp was.
But the difference here, Anthony, is that he's 24 and the other guys are 20.
Well, that's true, but I'm saying different from previous years, where in previous years you'd go into camp and there was a question like, who's going to be the depth guy? Who's going to be the role player? Do any of these guys have a future as a role player? Where I thought the top four, I'd call them, the Beckman, Boldy, Rossi, and Duhaime, these are four guys that all at some point in their career are likely to be a top half of the lineup kind of player.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first time since, I'd say, that last wave of players, you know, the Zucker, Granlund, Brodin, Dumba, that class, that was the last time we were watching guys in camp and saying, okay, maybe, I don't know if he'll make the team right out of camp, but when he does, he's going to be a top six player. And this is the first group of guys since that crew, and that's pretty exciting because mm-hmm. all of those guys looked like, I mean, the way Rossi played his last two games, I thought those were his best two, and the first two where
no
he
doubt.
Looked like he was
yep.
ready right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't think there was any chance he was going to make yep. the team, but in those two games, you watched him and yep. you thought, holy cow, this guy he's not that far away.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he is not far away. I think that, you know, I was a little surprised that the Wild, at least, even if it was not going to happen, that he had a chance of making the team, didn't at least throw him a bone for all his hard work that he did in the offseason by, like, letting him in practice or in an exhibition game play with top six NHL rostered guys. I was a little disappointed that that's the way the Wild handled that, because just the way that they slow played him in training camp, it was so clear that he didn't have a chance to make the team. And look, I get it. We talked about it on last week's podcast. He is somebody that is basically 19 years old. He missed 18 months of hockey. It is not a bad thing for them to start him down there. But I also think as a reward for everything that he did during the offseason, it would have been cool to just give him that and to let him go down to Iowa feeling that he wasn't sort of held back.
Yeah, who did he play with in the last home preseason game?
He played with Beckman in the game in St. Louis. He played with Boldy and Greenway. And then the last game he played with Beckman and not Duhaime.
It wasn't Duhaime. It was Beckman and one of the veteran guys. I just don't remember who it was. In the game Bukestad. That was here against
Bukestad,
Chicago.
Bukestad, right?
It was Bukestad.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, I mean, he had a chance to at least play with some legit guys, but I agree with you. I mean, I would have loved to have seen him, you know, go play with Kaprizov and Zuccarello
yeah.
for even if it's just for a day in practice and just see if when the game is played at their pace
yeah.
how close your pace was yeah. to that.
And on the end, you know, conversely to that, I get it from the Wild's point of view. This is, you know, they wanted, this is a new first line center between Kaprizov and Zuccarello, so they wanted to give Eriksson Ek as many reps as he possibly could with them. Same thing with Hartman on that next line. But it just would have been nice, at least in a practice, to give it to him, you know, and his parents and his his girlfriend and his sister show up at practice, and I'm chatting with them in the stands. And next thing you know, he gets sent down right after. It was pretty awkward.
What do you think of the makeup of the Wild lineup heading into opening night? I mean, I think we've talked a lot about the third defensive pair, and that's going to be a question. But what do you think of the makeup of the four lines?
Well, I like the makeup of the four lines. I think Ryan Hartman's going to have a really good year. The line that's really I still do not like is Fiala's line. I still don't see the positives that Freddie Goudreau is going to bring yet. Now it's early. Watching him in practice, he is really responsible on the defensive side of the puck. But for Fiala, he needs help offensively. It can't just be a single man guy. And then we've seen Victor Rask with him before, and I just don't know if that's going to work. And that's why I have a feeling at some point they're going to have to, whether it's Rem Pitlick or bringing Beckman back up, they're going to have to throw Fiala a lifeline, or we're going to see a very frustrated player. Somebody I respect was noting yesterday at Amsoil that Fiala did not look very happy both on the ice and off the ice. I just think that this is going to be a storyline here unless they get him some help. Because the problem with Kevin at times is when he gets frustrated, he tries to do everything on the ice himself, and that's where he winds up making a lot of mistakes. That's when he overplays the puck and all that stuff. So that's the one makeup of the line that I don't exactly love right now.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And I don't know what the proper fit will be for that. Maybe it's a month down the road that it is one of the recalls from Iowa. Maybe Pitlick brings a little juice to that line. Maybe Duhaime brings something to that line. I don't know. But
maybe they move Sturm up and Goudreau to the fourth line.
They seem very reluctant to do that.
Well, there's no doubt they seem reluctant to do
that. But the one thing I will say about Fiala is that I think we'll see them find ways to use him in conjunction with other players, even if it's not his regular line. It's amazing how fast. I mean, the power play looks terrific with he and Kaprizov and Zuccarello all on the ice at the same time. We saw it last year late where it was extra attacker time, those guys on the ice together. It was amazing how fast they would seem to click. And then I think with him seeing some time on the penalty kill, you'll see him, even though it's shorthanded, with some other guys that bring a little more speed. And maybe you just see some of that trickle over into, all right, they were on the ice at the end of the kill. We leave them out there and we throw this guy on the ice with them. Where you'll just see a few more minutes a night where he isn't stuck with the same line mates. And
right.
To say stuck is maybe a little bit of an exaggeration. I mean, who knows? Maybe he's got some connection with Goudreau. I don't know. It didn't seem to me like when I went back and looked like they overlapped as much as maybe the Wild made it sound like they did. But
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah. No, I would concur there. Again, help yourself to come up to the mic at any point. You don't need to wait for an invitation. I know we glossed over the third pair. That's my only other concern is, I was sort of buying into like, all right, this isn't going to be so bad when I watched them that first game in Colorado. And I thought that guys like Merrill and Jordy, I think Jordy Benn played in that game were good. It was Kulikov and Merrill that game, if I remember correctly. But the way that they finish, though, Ben and Merrill, and it sure feels like that the coaching staff wanted to give Ben that 6th D spot over Merrill, which sort of surprised me. When Brodin came out of the game in Colorado or Chicago for precautionary reasons and couldn't play, it was Merrill that went in. Ben was always playing, which makes me think that Ben was the guy that was going to start in Anaheim. And after Ben really picked up where he left off on that one exhibition game at home where he really struggled, now I do wonder if they're going to change that up. We'll see tomorrow at practice.
Yeah, I would guess it's Merrill and Kulikov to open, but
I would.
We'll see. I just think it's going to be difficult to lean on the third pair, not necessarily always just in minutes, but also in role. I mean, last year, what Dean was able to do is even defensive zone faceoffs, fourth line on the ice, it didn't matter. He could still throw the third D pair out there and trust them. And I think he's going to have to be a lot more careful with these guys, particularly early in the season where it's, all right, if these guys are on the ice, I got to make sure I've got a responsible defensive line in front of them. It can't be, and we got to make sure we're trying to keep them away from the other team's best. I think at least at first, that's and maybe all season that that's going to it's just going to require a little more maneuvering from a coaching perspective than what we saw last year.
Big time. I mean, can you imagine like the Wild going up against McKinnon and all of a sudden they ice the puck and who's coming out over the boards after they ice the puck? You're going to see coaches try to get mismatches against their third pair a lot this season. And I talked to Billy Guerin about that today, and Bill still is very confident in these guys. And what I said to Bill, and it's not like I'm trying to, sort of create the narrative at the beginning, but last year it took Bill Guerin one game to say, you know what, I need to fix the 6D, and he traded Greg Pattern to the Avs to get Ian Cole. And so I basically said to him, like, are you already looking for defensemen? Are you maybe going to, buy some time with them to maybe get Kalen Addison some games down in Iowa and bring him up? And he goes, no, I want to give them time. These guys are new defensemen. They're new to this team. They're new to getting to know everybody. They're new to the systems, all that stuff. He feels that all they need are time, and that third pair is going to be really good. So we'll see. I mean, Bill Guerin obviously knows a lot more about hockey than me, and so we'll see how that all shakes out.
I hope he's right, but I'm trying to remember what the things he was saying at this time last year about his third defensive pairing. He might have been saying the same thing. Like,
well, how about this one?
I
said to him today, I'm like, Carson Soucy was a healthy scratch last night for Seattle. Maybe we can reacquire him.
I thought Soucy got banged up at
no,
practice
the day
before.
He was a healthy scratch.
Was he?
They came out again today. Or call Carolina and say, hey, that Ian Cole guy. Because they do have the cap space. Obviously, Seattle's a new team. They've got a lot of D there. They're trying to figure everything out here. The fact that Soucy scratched one game doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be traded. But I will say this. I don't know if you remember what, everybody in this hall right now, is that the next morning. It wasn't that night. I had tweeted out that the Kraken were already taking calls on Carson Soucy the day after the expansion draft. So they were at least investigating. Like I know one, well, I could tell you one front office member from another team called me to ask me about my thoughts on Soucy. So I knew right away that he was out there. And so, look, maybe Soucy doesn't have a forever, Kraken tattoo on his middle of his back like Brent Burns used to have with the Minnesota Wild. And I said to him, what are you doing? Like, don't you know you could get traded? It's not that you're here for life. He's like, I'll just turn into a big forest. I'm like, okay. So anyway.
You get lost in the beard anyway.
Exactly. Who wants to ask a question? Somebody wants to ask a question. First one, I think the rule is the first one to ask a question gets free gopher tickets. Sweet.
Well, Trio Orthopedics is coming on board, and we're thrilled to have them. Dr. Boyd is a guy with whom I've had, Dr. Joel Boyd. He reconstructed my knee for me after I tore it all up on a ski slope, and Dr. Boyd put it back together, an ACL and MCL. Dr. Boyd's just among the tremendous doctors they have down there, and no matter what the ailment, no matter what the part of your body that you need work on, they've got a guy who specializes in that. He did a tremendous job. And 6 months after having ACL surgery, I was back playing floor hockey with my kids and playing racquetball and squash and able to run up and down the court. They've got tremendous people, tremendous customer service, and you can walk in if you need to. It's why you're treated and how you're treated by TRIA that makes it special. Walk into TRIA Orthopedic Urgent Care or schedule your appointment without referrals online at TRIA.com/podcast.
And I want to tell everybody about my friends at Profile. It's that time of year again. The fall has started, which means the kids are back in school, and now's the time to finally do something for yourself. Maybe you're thinking it's time to get back on track with your health. Profile can help. They have a variety of plans to fit any budget, and Profile really, really works. Trust me, I have lost a lot of weight. I still feel fantastic, and I'm still maintaining probably for about 9 months, which is probably the longest I've ever done in my life. So Profile has helped me, and they can help you too. So what are you waiting for? Set up your free no-obligation consultation today. You'll be glad you did. Visit profileplan.com/TwinCities for more detail. Use promo code Russo and save $100 on your Profile membership. Again, that's profileplan.com, and here's a word from Minnesota Propane Association.
Hi, I'm Laura Shera, and did you know that a propane gas furnace lifespan averages 20 years, while electric heat pumps only last 14 years? And propane furnaces work in all temperatures while delivering warm and consistent heat to your home. Why buy two heating systems when one propane furnace can do it all? It lasts longer, works better, and it costs less. These things and more are done with propane today. The right energy, right now.
Ah, there we go. By the way, if the person that we met here last time that are the Kraken fans, I realize, like, if you're listening to this podcast, I know you emailed me like 3 weeks ago and I owe you an email back, and I just remembered that I never didn't email you back. So I will email you back. If and you know who I'm talking about, the man that was here.
Yeah.
Remember the guy, the Kraken fan, fan with the kids?
Yep.
Yep.
I just want to clarify, those are Gopher hockey tickets, right? Okay. Otherwise, I'd have to go back and sit back down. Okay.
Hey, there's nothing like TCF Bank Stadium, those suites. Those are really nice, or whatever it's called now.
First of all, Anthony, I want to apologize for your own loss in the cook-off not too many weeks ago. I know you thought it was a win.
I didn't. No, I accept that it was a loss. I was a little disappointed. His was good. He came out with some like artillery that I didn't have, the frying pan and the butter and the fresh herbs and everything. But his were good, I gotta say. Like it wasn't a joke. I have no problem admitting I lost.
You know, this is starting to sound like
the excuses every podcast excuses every podcast. But you have no problem that I lost.
No.
I didn't bring my kitchen to the show.
I don't cook with any of that stuff anyway. I cooked them the same way I always do, with salt and pepper. But I'm just like, if I had lost to a guy that was like some kind of clown, that would have been disappointing. This guy knew what he was doing. His were tasty.
So I didn't mean it to go that long.
Yeah, no, that's all right. I've been ridiculed at home plenty of times about it too. Yeah, Dad, your steaks aren't quite as good as you thought, huh?
So my question is more for Michael. I followed him for a number of years. I asked him earlier how long ago he's been with the Star Tribune. He said it was 4 years ago. And I think the last time I asked him a question,
it was about a month ago, 4 years ago, that I had a panic attack.
I got a Russo's Rant T-shirt for asking a question at that one too.
So my question—that's Russo's Filter created those. Nick Henry.
Yeah, they're impressive. So my question, Michael, for you. I mean, you share a lot of your knowledge. I almost feel like an addict when I go to The Athletic, especially during COVID. Looking for when is the next posting going to be, and there was nothing there. And we're getting a lot of them now. But my question for you directly is, you share a lot of knowledge with us Minnesota fans and NHL fans throughout the nation. What differentiates your knowledge from a GM? If you were a GM, the question was for Michael. The question was for Michael.
Seriously, why don't you go take a walk, Anthony?
So where do you think you would excel at, and where do you have opportunities for improvement?
First of all, I want to keep my day job because I have more job security in my day job. That's the one thing I've learned since I've outlasted every coach, player, GM, and owner I've ever covered. That's not true. Mike Keenan, the second time, outlasted me because I moved here.
Well, I've already outlasted every coach and GM, and I've been at this a lot less time.
But no, I mean, look, where would I mean... The one thing when you talk to all these GMs is it's a 24/7. It's so much stuff. I mean, there are times you look at whether it's Paul Fenton, Chuck Fletcher, Bill Guerin, Doug Risebrough, and they're on the phone. And you're thinking, oh, he's on a GM, and they get off and they were like on a financial meeting with the CFO over they have so many more roles than just the hockey op stuff. So many more responsibilities, just the fires they have to put out. You mentioned the knowledge that I have. Like, trust me, I'm still aware that I probably know 1% of everything that's really going on with the Wild. Even just news and situations that are happening, are never going to wind up something that I find out. Or a lot of times things happen that I do see that's just you can't write. That happens all the time. It's not that's the one thing. It's not fantasy. There's so many things that make up coming up with a trade. There's so many, even there's just the stuff like everybody's always like, oh, get that number one center, but they don't realize the repercussions that it creates on 6, 7, 8 other things that byproduct is gonna trigger. So there's just so many things. I don't think I'm organized enough to be able to handle that type of thing. I could barely, when I'm working on 3 or 4 different stories at once, my head feels like it's going to explode. So I just can't imagine that type of stuff that they deal with. I did have the opportunity to go work in a front office 8 or 9 years ago. And And I did. I turned it down, and I'm glad I did because the GM was out in a year, and that meant I would have been out, and my career probably would have been over because nobody likes a sports writer that crosses to the dark side. It's, you know, it represents.
I think they look at it as GM, as front office guys that cross to the dark side, going the other
but
way.
Yeah. But you know, but when you're a sports writer, or a sports journalist, and all of a sudden you go take a job with a front office for a team, it's like you've crossed this boundary where there's an appearance of impropriety. A conflict of interest, essentially. So I think most media companies would be like, well, I'm not hiring that guy now. You know, he just put himself in a position where he, you know, took advantage of a conflict of interest. So I'm glad I didn't take that job, and it was stressful at the time. But reality is it really job security? I mean, you know, there's, you know,
those guys don't last very long. But what I would say, and I talk to the GM all the time because I'm trying to learn. And, you know, for me, I spent a lot of my early part of my career in the baseball world. And what I learned from those general managers about scouting and player development and talent evaluation, in addition to all the other stuff that he's talking about, where you are in charge of the training staff and you're in charge of making sure that your travel guide does things the way you, all that kind of stuff. And then meeting with the team president when it's to set your budget and all that kind of stuff would blow you away, the hours that get committed there. But the little things that those guys see when they watch a player
100%.
Is amazing. And, I mean, I'll tell you, like, the analysts with which we work that are not qualified to be GMs, but, you know, a couple of them have been in the coaching side, they'll watch a player and say, he can't turn to his right efficiently enough to play that position or something. Just the little things they'll pick up and the way he skates
100%.
Is so far beyond what even guys, I'd say, like Michael or even the most knowledgeable TV guys. I mean, they are at a different level.
And patience level for me, like, you know, like the one thing about GMs and coaches is they've got to be patient or you could immediately, you know, you leave a rink angry, you might trade the guy the next day.
Right.
And I am the type of guy that would do that. I call Anthony every night on the way back. I'm like, they need to get rid of that Kaprizov guy.
But, so, you know what's interesting about that is, and it's what I've always said is, like, when you listen to talk radio guys, they always want to criticize a previous trade. And, wow, I mean, they traded this guy for that guy. But what a terrible – well, okay, the day they made the trade, were you saying the same thing? And when they throw out trades, they never have to deal with the repercussions. They never pay the price 5 years later when you gave away your first and second round pick to try to win that year. So there's so much more the long game
You know, a really good example is where, you know, like Brent Flair, the old Wild assistant GM, how much criticism did he take for the last 4 or 5 years for taking Erickson Ek over Besser? And I was talking to a GM on the phone today.
Which
that said there's
you also 100%. Made the statement.
I remember sitting with Brent Flair in Anaheim at the practice facility at Disney Ice in a debate with him. I was doing a Besser versus Joel Erickson Ek story. This is like 5, 6 years ago. And I remember debating him with this. I'm like, and he's like, trust me, one day you'll want 10 Joel Erickson Eks. And I'm just rolled my eyes. I remember the same thing. Like Scandella, I would have traded in a minute. And he turned out to be a really quality defenseman in this league. Fiala, his first year here. I was like, what is up with this guy? Can't not turn the puck over. These guys see so much more stuff than a lowly sports writer that's never played the game. The one thing I wouldn't be good at with a GM as a GM is dealing with the media. I would freaking rip on them. I could, if I got ripped in the paper, I would call that freaking writer up and just
Hey, careful, Father Jingdahl's here. Can't say that.
Sorry, Father. I'll go to confession tomorrow.
Father Jingdahl once came to my house for dinner and blessed my house, and now you're cussing on
the air in his
presence.
I know. Father Jingdahl, he works at a high school. I think he's heard people drop the F-bomb before. But I resisted. Oh, now I'm in trouble.
Yep.
Great.
Now, here
this
we go.
This is awesome.
Yep. He did once come and bless my house, by the way.
Really?
Yes.
It's a nice house.
So you should feel, when you walk in the door for the next Sunday dinner,
nice.
You should feel that positive aura.
I do. Every time I'm there.
Right.
With Phil and Stanley and Margo. Most important person.
So, not that I watch Cap or read Cap Friendly in between confessions, but when I was looking at it, I was kind of wondering about, like, the entry-level contracts. You know, those are 3 years.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how much say, does Bill Guerin have over, say, the coaching staff on making sure that some of these new guys will have just 10 games and stay down? Because that would certainly help that 3 years of that big buyout contract that's there. Mm-hmm. And how tempting is that going to be for them to have that be a factor in going forward?
Well, I mean, Bill Guerin made that decision on Rossi and Beckman and what would have been Boldy. There's no doubt. You know, I think that was all, I mean, an organizational decision, there's no doubt. But that stuff is, it's a collaborative thing. But if Marco Rossi plays 9 games this year, it's because the front office made sure that he didn't hit that 10. And that's the magic number there to burn the first year of the deal. But look, this is an organizational philosophy with these 20-year-olds that they want them to go down and play and develop and get games. And so absolutely, Bill Guerin has a big say in that. It doesn't, you trust me, it was very clear that Dean Evason wanted Beckman on this team. For 2-3 days, that's why if you started reading me in The Athletic, you saw I was starting to really predict that Duham was the only guy that was going to make the team. And it was because Dean was so clear in his post games that in a couple days, there's going to be some guys that are very upset with us, and we're upset too. Like, you could just tell he wanted Beckman. He loved that guy, and he will get to coach him at some point this year.
But that's the balance between a coach and a GM.
Yep.
A coach wants, I want this guy now. I want this guy today.
Dean Evason is in the last year of his contract. Right. You think he doesn't want the best players on the team
where
now?
Where the GM has to look at it and say, okay, but in order to keep Beckman on this team and Duham on this team, well, then somebody has to go. I mean, how do you make it all fit? And that's not – hockey's not the only spot where this happens. I mean, there's service time rules, again, to go back to baseball, and they have service time rules where if a guy's up for X number of days, now his contract kicks in. And I've talked to managers and to hockey coaches all the time, like – they want the lineup that gives them a chance to win tonight. The GM's looking at the big picture 3, 4, 5 years down the road, maybe more. And there's the great ones are the ones that work in lockstep. And I hate to keep using baseball analogies, but that's why the Minnesota Twins were successful for so long. Terry Ryan and Tom Kelly and then Ron Gardenhire, they were on the same page with all of it. That's not always the case when you've got a coach with 1 year on a contract that's only been here for a couple of years where there isn't that security and that I know this guy isn't going to be going to the owner saying, well, the manager's the problem, let's get rid of him. That you have to have guys that have some synergy in their relationship. The great teams have it.
Yeah. And again, with Bill is, you know, the bottom line is his job is to worry about the future of this organization and many, many years down the line. And he feels like this is the best way for these kids to develop and be mainstays here for many, many years. And where the coach has different, you know, different agendas, obviously. In every coach, not just Dean Evason. We're talking 32 coaches, you know, unless you're John Cooper.
And he knows where he's going to be for the next 3 years against the cap. Yep. And he knows he's got a guy sitting next to him with the numbers saying, this year we have to have two of these guys be on their entry-level deal or the math doesn't work.
Yep.
So they absolutely have to push – they have to at least push one or two of these guys a year down the road or else the math just isn't going to work.
Yeah.
Just as a follow-up, I'm just wondering...
Now you get two drawings.
Right, and that's why I'm asking the second one.
Right.
So when or is Bill Guerin going to have us get a number one center? No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
That could be Rossi. That could be Kuznetsov. You know, we see now that you have to pay these guys. Barkov just got paid. Zibanejad's going to get paid. Hurdle's about the only one out there right now, right? So it's pretty interesting. Thanks, Father. Sorry I swore. Yeah. I do think that God should give immunity to sports
writers. This is about when you turn
writers.
To Brandon and say, hey, Brandon, can you mark that time down and go back and delete it out for me?
I think there should be immunity for people that spend any time in a locker room or a sports, like a press box, to be able to just drop some F-bombs, because that's the world up there. You know?
Well, it is, but it's like...
I think the most impressive thing is that when I put the microphone up, I don't usually do it on TV.
When my boys were growing up, I was working for the St. Paul Saints, and they got to come to the ballpark with me all day, every day. This is when they were, you know, 4 and 5 years old. And the rule was, you guys can go wherever you want inside the stadium. You can go inside the clubhouse. You had to pay clubhouse dues so you could eat. But any language you ever heard in the clubhouse, if I ever heard it repeated anywhere else, then you couldn't come to the park anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So... they were 4 and 5. They could figure out that what was said in the clubhouse couldn't be said, and they didn't have a microphone in front of them. They figured it out.
Mm-hmm. Next.
All right. And AJ and Vinny will attest to that story, by the way.
So looking at the predictions for the Central, pretty much everyone puts Colorado first, but then kind of flip-flops Winnipeg and Minnesota, second and third. So how do you think that'll play out in the standings through the season?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I really like the offseason that Kevin Cheveldayoff had in Winnipeg. I thought that it was a great trade to get Nate Schmidt there. I love the Brendan Dillon pickup. I mean, that has been their issue the last couple of years. And if Connor Hellebuck bounces back from the year that he had last year, I mean, up front, they're as good as any team in the league. You know, Pierre-Luc Dubois gets his head on straight.
I think that's one of the big questions. I think the whole – did you happen to look at the Vegas odds in the Central?
No.
It's crazy. So Colorado's like minus 250 to win the division, which is absurd when you're just picking one team that they're a favorite that large. And Minnesota was the second – had the second best odds at like plus 700 or something like that. I mean, the split is wide. But I think when you look at the Central, Colorado should be one and Arizona should be eight. And I don't think – it would surprise. I mean, it would be a mild surprise, but it wouldn't be a major surprise if any of the other teams finished second, or if any of the other teams finished seventh. I mean, there's a scenario you could see happening where just about any of those it could happen. I mean, maybe Chicago couldn't finish second, but it wouldn't surprise me if they finished third or fourth. I mean, I think with Minnesota and Winnipeg, it'll come down to, can Pierre-Luc Dubois fulfill his promise, and for Minnesota, Can their third defensive pair stand up, and can the young guys provide any kind of a boost?
Yeah, I completely agree. I do like the Jets, though, this year. Like, I really do. I love Hellebuck as a goalie. I love Scheifele and Connor and Wheeler and Ehlers. You know, Dubois is one guy I've not been a fan of. I feel like he loafs around the ice too much. There's just more there. But you know what? His dad, I think, is still an assistant coach with the Moose. So that having that, you know, that sort of influence there might be something that motivates him to, you know, go home and there's dad yelling at you because you loafed around the ice. I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
I don't think it's likely his dad will have much of an influence on him.
Next. Go get those Gopher tickets. Who's next? There we go. This is Brody from Brody Talks Hockey. He interviewed Hank Johnson of Mercyhurst today on his podcast.
Oh, yeah.
How'd that go?
Check it out. It went well. Yeah. It went really well. So, not as good as this is going by.
So 20, the Mercyhurst goalie, Anthony, is like 35. And he played at Bemidji. He's from, played with Zach Whitecloud, right?
Yeah.
Over at Bemidji. Now he's at Mercyhurst. He's a graduate student. And he got to play at Mariucci.
Use the COVID rule or whatever to get a sixth year. Yeah. I've got a couple of friends who are doing that this year. So, yeah, there are going to be some old guys. I don't know if 35 is accurate, but
he's not that old. He's right. Exaggerating. Yeah.
He turns 26 in January.
Yeah.
Close. Yeah,
for sure. But, no, my question's regarding the Wild. I was going to ask, who do you think is going to be the biggest surprise, either in a good way or a bad way, this season?
Good question. I'll let you go first so I can think.
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, I don't know if it'll be a big surprise, but I think Joel Eriksson Ek is going to fit really well in a top-line center role. And, you know, even though he scored 19 goals last year, what, he have 10 assists? I mean, he has to have more than that. So I think, and I just think he's going to fit better than maybe anybody thought he would in that kind of a role. That would be the positive, and I think the surprise going the other way, I don't know. I guess it's hard to call it a surprise because I just don't see a fit with the line we talked about earlier.
That line might not be together on Saturday night in L.A., honestly.
No.
I just don't see the fit. Now, when I say that, I mean, Rem Pitlick might replace Rask. Like, I could see that. I really think that Victor Rask gets the respect from Dean Evason, starts opening night, and Rem in the box. Pretty positive that Brandon Duhame's playing opening night because I know his family's coming out to Anaheim because I'm meeting with them before the game. So, and that happens. That's part of the collective bargaining agreement now is that family gets flown out there by the teams for your NHL debut. So, I mean, I suppose you could obviously say he's not playing tonight. You're coming to the game in LA, but I'm pretty positive.
He's going to play one of the two for sure.
Yep. For me, I really like Ryan Hartman. I just think that this is now going to be his sort of maturation of getting a bigger step in the league. So I think that he'll fit in well on that line. And my the other way, that's pretty interesting. I also think Goligoski is going to fit in really well with Spurgeon. But I'm a bias because I wrote a story on him yesterday and I just absolutely loved the whole reporting aspect of that story and getting to know his family. I got to meet his brother yesterday at practice, talked to his parents on the phone, so that's cool. Surprise the other way. That's a hard one. I think Nico Sturm is going to have a good year. To me, there's of all the people that are here, I think that those guys, all those players are going to be as good as they've always been and nobody really disappointing. I guess the surprise the other way would be, I just don't buy that Ben and Merrill, I don't buy that they're not going to have to fix that at some point. That's just my
gut. It's hard to label things as surprise the other way because we've already been thinking about it. It wouldn't,
a surprise the other way would be if all of a sudden Kaprizov had 50 points at the end of the year, right? That'd be a surprise the other way, which I don't see how that's possible unless, a Zuccarello got hurt or something, which would stink.
No, for sure. And I kind of had a follow-up question to it. Regarding my surprise, I think it's probably going to be Fiala underperforming. If he stays on that line, do you think that there's any chance that he moves up or there's a line change situation? I know you said that Beckman could have a chance of coming up, but would something else be?
Yeah, I think they're either going to have to get him help or there's always going to be those ruts in a season when, say, Kaprizov and Zuccarello aren't working and then all of a sudden maybe you throw Fiala up there and you jumpstart everything. There's always going to be stuff like that. So there's always that chance he moves up. What do you think?
I don't think that's likely, only because if you put those two guys on the same line for a night, you become more easily defendable. Those guys have to be on separate lines, and it's just a reality. What's unfortunate for Fiala is, and I say unfortunate, he's earned some of this. Kaprizov outplayed him. Kaprizov deserves to be where he is. But what Fiala has to be on an opposite line from him, and unfortunately it just has always clicked with Kaprizov and Zuccarello and now with Eriksson Ek, where he's been supported. But, let's keep in mind, Kaprizov and Zuccarello did this with Victor Rask in the middle most of last year, and still it didn't slow them down. So just putting Victor Rask on Fiala's line doesn't give Fiala a free pass to say that's why you can't score. Go score and create with the other guys that are there. I just don't think the solution will be to play him with those guys. I think the solution will probably come from moving some other guys around. And maybe it's one of the young guys that gets that first shot to come up and play with him.
If Beckman dominates down there, I could see him up here in a month. We'll see. And maybe Pitlick winds up being that guy.
He's scoring a lot.
Rem Pitlick, and it's not just at the college or the junior level. He scored in the minors, too, a point a game. And obviously the NHL is a different animal. But even though I got a text today from somebody in the league about Rem Pitlick that said, look, he's a top six forward, so I don't see him fitting on the third line. But if Fiala is the third line right wing, that's not your typical third line.
Right.
Rem Pitlick can function in that spot. The Wild second line is essentially what would be labeled a third line in yesteryear, right? Usually you always, it's just always top two scoring lines, the checking lines, the third line, then you have the fourth line. In the Wild's case, if you look at line rushes, technically the Hartman line's the second line, but it really depends on how you're going to look at it. And maybe Rem Pitlick winds up being that guy. And you could have if Goudreau doesn't work, as you mentioned, you could have a Pitlick Rask Fiala line, you can move Nico up. There are ways to do it, or you can, wait for Beckman or Boldy down in Iowa.
You mentioned Ryan Hartman. It's interesting. I don't think you realize just how young he still is.
Yes.
It's crazy. He feels like the veteran, the old, reliable third line guy. He's 26, only 26
right?
years old. He's just been in the league forever.
Yeah.
And, I think this guy still has more to give than what we've seen, and playing on the line that he is right now, I agree with you. I think he might be a guy that really surprises, and all of a sudden we see a kick in his production this year.
No doubt about that. Any other questions? We got about 15-20 minutes left. Everybody's coming up.
I always tell you about Aquarius Home Services, and last week I told you about their limited time combo tune-up for just $55. That's right. You can get your AC working properly after the summer heat and get your furnace evaluated for the change of seasons. That offer expires tomorrow, October 15th, so take advantage of that now. But folks, it's also that time of year again. Many of us love the fall season. I just came back from Duluth and the leaves were just absolutely gorgeous, but it does mean colder weather is right around the corner. Well, whether it's repairing or replacing your furnace, Aquarius Home Services has the team and knowledge to keep you and your home warm and cozy this winter, including new furnaces starting as low as $45 per month. My advice, contact Aquarius Home Services and have one of their trained specialists stop out and provide a free estimate. Their 100% performance guarantee is backed by the best material, product, and labor warranties in the business. They're just a click away at AquariusHomeServices.com. And don't forget to mention Russo sent you.
And there's still time to get the grill fired up and enjoy some of the great steaks you can pick up at Kowalski's before the summer is over. We've had a couple of great meals lately with the family in town and had another can't miss, which, you know, it's hard to say another. It's can't miss, but you can't miss with the steaks you can pick up there. But when you go to Kowalski's, check out the deli area. When you're throwing together an appetizer tray, their people are so knowledgeable when it comes to different cheeses and different salamis and can help you get the right combination on your appetizer platter. The Briat cheese is my favorite with they've got a Red Table salami it's from a company here, a local Minnesota company, that the salamis are awesome. You can pick them up at Kowalski's. If you're going to have a great meal, you're going to have great company, you're going to have a great night just celebrating food and drink around the table, you might as well start with the best ingredients, and I get those at Kowalski's.
And you've seen Chris Lindahl all over town, his billboards, his dancing jingles on the television. And I think I've told you a million times that he and his colleague, Jenna, sold my unsellable condo in downtown Minneapolis. So thankfully, that happened all before the pandemic as well. So at least I got out of my 900-square-foot condo. But he has told me, Chris Lindahl, that people should feel a lot more confident in putting their home on the market this summer. And now we're getting into the fall, and it's the same thing. So that's because Chris Lindahl's Real Estate Guaranteed Offer Program gives you confidence that you're getting great value, that the experience will be incredibly convenient, and that you'll be able to bid on homes that other buyers can't even see yet. With Chris Lindahl Real Estate, you get market rate value for your home, 90 full days to close, and access to off-market inventory. Call Chris Lindahl Real Estate today at 763-401-SOLD or go to chrislindahl.com to request a no-obligation guaranteed offer on your home.
Well, with the struggles of the third pair, uh-huh, and Jordy Benn in particular, how much does Kalen Addison play this year?
Well, that's the thing. Like, I think we're going to see him at some point if they don't make a trade. That's just I just don't see how we're not. Especially if it gets to the point where, as Anthony sort of alluded at the beginning of the show, is that if Dean doesn't have a lot of trust with them after a certain amount of time, and then all of a sudden you're playing like the top two pairs and you're loading them up playing 28 and 25 minutes a night or something, like that just is not sustainable. Like it is maybe in October where they only have like 8 or 9 games, but once we hit November, December, this team is starting to play every single night, and once they get to March, it is March and April, their schedule is just bonkers.
Yeah, what's interesting about Addison though is he's not like a guy that you bring up to be a like rigorous defensive guy.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a little different than your normal third pair guy. This is a third pair guy that's going to be a puck moving power play type guy, which not to say they can't use him there, because I thought during this training camp he looked a lot more poised with the puck in the exhibition games. Mm-hmm. He looked a lot more confident with the puck, and you can defend with the ability to skate as well as just being a big physical guy. I think Addison plays a lot this year. I think it's highly unlikely that we see just the three guys right now that are rotating on that third pair be the third pair all year.
Yeah, and the other thing with Addison is, like, if they needed that power play role, it makes sense, as Anthony just said. But, look, I mean, Spurgeon's on the number one unit. You're going to have a mix. You're going to have Dumba on the second unit. But remember, Fiala's at the left point on the first, so that leaves now Goligoski or Brodin alternating. So there's already one really good puck-moving defenseman, and Goligoski has forever been a power play guy, so I've got to think you start him. But Brodin had 9 goals last year in 40-something games. So like he's starting to show some offensive ability. So right now there's not even a spot for one of those two to play on a power play every single game. So where does that leave Addison? If you're going to have Addison on this team, you'd think you'd want him on the power play. And that's why I still don't buy that that Matt Dumba is here long term. Like, I still think that Kalen Addison is eventually the heir apparent to him, because I also don't think, unless Matt Dumba is taking a pay cut, of how they're going to be able to afford all this. I mean, remember, they've got $15 million of cap space for next year, and they've got to re-sign Goligoski, Greenway, Kakinen, and Fiala, and Sturm. Math doesn't add up.
Goligoski's not going to get
that. See, I can be a GM. Yep. See, away. Off the top of my head, I know that doesn't work.
I'll send the results from the Donkey Hockey League over the last few years. And
that's not real.
Your
hockey.
Resume will get thrown out the window.
Let me just
quickly
tell you, first of all, the collective bargaining agreement was really he calls it the CBA. Okay, it's really it's the SBA. It was singularly bargained to benefit his team. Every rule in there, like all of a sudden we have this rule.
It was written
there
before we started.
All of a sudden he had the best centers in the league. He quadruple beat everybody else in faceoffs. Now his team, now they can't win a draw. Now next year we get to pick we allot who wins draws for the centers. How did that happen?
Well, number one, it got voted on by all the owners. You didn't show up that night. But
well, that's true.
Number two, we call it sour grapes, and when you finish last all the time, you tend to whine.
That was a Brian Burke line once. Yeah. That was a great Brian Burke line once.
Really?
Yeah. He about Doug Risebrough. He said, "I thought all the great wines were in Napa, but apparently they're in the Twin Cities." It was after the 2007 playoff series. So.
So tangentially related to the Wild, I saw.
How do you spell that?
Man, I don't know right now.
I'm going to use that. You will know. You will be the only one, and anybody that listens to this podcast, I will use that word in an article this week, just as a shout out.
Thank you.
Somebody remind me.
I'll tell you how to spell it
and what it means.
Yeah, tangentially. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Let's hear it. It's the first question ever that started with that word. But
I saw that Mayhew got sent down by the Flyers the other week. Do you think he ever gets a chance in the NHL?
I think he's a classic in-betweener, and I love Jerry, but he is, you know, we saw him enough last year to just know that he's going to be minor league. There are guys like that, right?
Yeah. Bruce Boudreau.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. AHL superstars. Yep.
Although Bruce would even admit a lot of that might have had to do with his,
no doubt.
Fun
but there's just
the
guys
ice.
Like that, that they're so. Like, they dominate that league, but there's something missing in the step to the NHL, and I just think he's one of them.
Yeah. No doubt about it. So, and he's somebody that I will say I always thought that he had a chance, but you know, he just obviously hasn't shown up. How many drawing tickets do you want?
I like Gopher hockey.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So Anthony, earlier in the podcast,
ask Anthony about being a GM.
But I'm kind of putting him on a spot.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Earlier in the podcast, you mentioned about a player going to the GM. So is there any specifics within the Minnesota Wild? And then my second question is, how do you see this year's locker room team environment versus previous years?
Well, it's an interesting question, and what we haven't been in the locker room yet. So, and we've been around the team a little bit more. Watching from the seats during practice, it looks dramatically different. I'll know a lot more next Monday when we do the show here, because I'll have just traveled with the team for 2 days. And it feels very different. And you can just sense it in the way you watch the guys interact. We did do some one-on-one interviews with players. But what's so different, we talked about this a lot over the last year, is when we weren't in the locker room at any point during last season, you never really had a great feel for what was going on. You just didn't. I mean, any conversation was one-on-one with a player via Zoom, and that's not the same as when you walk in the room and you see who's interacting with each other.
Yep.
You just see who sits next to each other, who laughs with each other. You pick up a ton of stuff when you're inside the room.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, a great example is like the whole Parisi scratch in Vegas stuff. That's one. If I was around and was able to experience everything and talk to people off the record, I would have written that in a totally different light. And you know, even since that happened, I've learned so much more around it that I would have known at the time, and it just makes things difficult. And and I know I interrupted Anthony, but I will say this: I talked to Spurgeon and Foligno about this the other day, and I'm going to be writing about this in my season preview if I as long as my outlet works on the plane tomorrow, because my laptop's not holding a charge right now. So. It's up to Delta if you read that season preview. But Spurgeon says there is such an energy in this room right now. And now they haven't lost a game. So a lot of this sometimes is you know, we like everybody loves each other in training camp, right? But he said that there's just a different energy in there and that they want to. And again, it sounds like they're throwing shade on the previous regime, and that I don't think it's the way that Spurgeon means it, but their goal is to that everybody has a voice in that locker room. And that whether you've been here, he says, 10 years or 1 year, whether you've played 900 games in the league or two, that if you have something to say, that you feel comfortable to say it. And there's this energy in the room. I mean, Foligno was talking about Eriksson Ek walking around the locker room the other day singing like Swedish techno. And Foligno was saying that stuff that a lot of guys would not. That, now, maybe it's because he feels comfortable. He's got the 8-year deal. He feels like he's established now. Yeah. But he says there's stuff that people just didn't feel comfortable doing in the years past, and that there's this growth in the room right now with these guys. As Billy Guerin said to me today on the phone, there's this growth right now with the guys that have invested in being here. And we're seeing that with Brodin, with Eriksson Ek, with those.
Well, it was hard for Spurgeon last year. He's named the captain, but you're still in a room that has the previous leaders, so to speak. Yeah. And even the previous year wasn't that far removed when you still had Dubnyk and Staal and Koivu and that and those guys. And all of those guys, they were great guys for the Minnesota Wild when they arrived, but it was just time. It was time to turn the page. I asked Billy Guerin about Spurgeon the other day, and we asked Jared this when we taped an interview with him before the season, about now, do you feel like you're able to lead for the first time? And he said, I kind of feel like it's our room now.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that to me says a lot.
And Guerin, like what he said also today, is he's like, look, this is not unlike what the Penguins went through, what the Blackhawks went through, what the Kings went through. They won these cups, and then there had to be changes in the middle, and the differences in Pittsburgh when he was on the managerial staff there. They wound up winning two more cups after those changes when things went stale there between 2009 and 2017, or 2016, because they beat San Jose the first year. But the difference with those teams, they all won cups. This team went through that. And the Coils, the Zuckers, and the Niederreiters and those guys weren't able to get them to the promised land with the support system that Suter and Parisi had here. And there just had to be changes. And when everybody realized it was in 2018 against Winnipeg, when Suter was hurt, when Spurgeon was playing on half a leg, when Parisi got hurt breaking his sternum in Game 5, and what happened in that playoff series, Coil, Niederreiter, and Zucker didn't have a point. When they needed to be the guys that were leaned on. And when that happened and Chuck Fletcher was fired the next day, but that's when all of a sudden Paul Fenton came in and everybody recognized it's time to break this apart. And even Bill Guerin said to me today, it happened. He did not plan when he became the GM here to tear it apart in 2 years, to get rid of Dubnyk, Staal,
Koivu,
Dubnyk, Koivu, you know, all these guys. You know, he didn't think that he would be able to achieve all that quickly. Achieve might be the wrong word, you know, execute. But the way it worked, it just happened that way. And now it's anew. And now they got all these kids coming, in large part because I will give, you know, even somebody that didn't like Paul Fenton said to me on the phone the other day, give Paul Fenton credit. His two drafts here were great. It looks like Judd Brackett's continued that the last couple drafts as well. And now they have this pipeline of kids coming, but he also, Bill, thinks that there's enough guys on this team to win this year as well.
So one last question, because I really like Gopher hockey. I hear Koivu is face is being seen around a little bit farther.
Yeah.
Do we know more what his role is going to be? And he's been helping some of the younger players on the faceoff win percentage.
Well, I haven't seen him much on the ice yet with guys for faceoffs, but he's going to be on the player development side to help guys make the adjustment to pro hockey. And I think it's kind of interesting, because when Billy let him go or told him that they weren't going to renew his contract, he made it clear. He said, this is not personal. This is just, Mikko's been awesome for this organization, but it's just time. We've got to get younger. We got to get faster. And this is not personal. Yeah. And I think this is a great example of that Billy's been able to separate so far personal from the what happens on the ice, and the fact that Mikko is now retired and immediately brought back to help out in the organization, and you see those guys sitting next to each other and talking at practice. Yeah. I love to see that because I'm sure Billy. Look, I mean, Mikko, I would have loved it if I could have been here when you were in your prime, and I would have loved the type of player you were, but it was just time.
Just last point on this, and then we're going to do this awesome drawing from Grain Belt. And I guess I'm the one, or Anthony. We'll let Brandon do it, so I don't know. But I will say
let the Grain Belt do it. All right, Joel can do it.
Put it in front of me. But that's, you know, right. What Anthony was said about nothing personal too. That's where, like, I think, you know, to bring this back to the beginning when you said, like, what would your talents be for GM? That's where I would struggle. Like, I've never managed. I've never fired anybody. It would pain me to go up to Mikko Koivu and say, you're done here. It would pain me to go up to Zach Parise, even though Zach wanted out like there was no tomorrow. It would pain me to be like, you're leaving, especially me and my relationship with Zach. It sucks not having him in that locker room right now.
So Joe had to go get his beer because your story was taking too long.
But you know, like
I agree with you.
Eric Staal is a great example. Like, Bill Guerin traded Eric Staal. Eric was very upset when he was traded. They hadn't spoken since. They recently had a really good conversation. It was good. And that's what the conversation was about, is Bill saying it's nothing personal. Bill's career ended in the same way. Guys, all of a sudden you're done. That's the way this world works. Devin Dubnyk had a great NHL career. He's just, like, disappeared off the planet. Eric Staal had a great NHL career. Not signed right now. It ends. Not everybody gets that crying press conference like Mike Modano got to say goodbye to everybody, right? Most people just, play your 15 years and you're gone, and it ends with a horrible conversation, and that's what I would suck at if I was a manager.
I'm always thankful I don't have a job where I have to tell anybody that.
Exactly.
It's honest to God.
You know, there's some people I would like to fire, though. Some people on this team I would like to say goodbye to. Yeah. So,
Joel's going to do the drawing. All right.
Yep. Grain Belt, thank you very much. Yep. Two sweet tickets to a Gophers game. Against who? Michigan? Who? You get to go see 7 first-round picks?
Yeah. They'll figure that out at a later time.
You want me to read it?
No, Joel's got the mic. Okay. He can do it.
You read it.
Good luck.
Rod. There you go.
It's almost like we planned it.
Rod.
Guy asked 25 questions.
Well, he stuffed the ballot box. Yeah.
25 questions during the show, and he gets his 2 Gopher tickets. Unbelievable. Well, thanks for saying how much you love the Athletic and that you want me to be a GM. You deserve those sweet tickets. Like, there's nothing, and like no other thing. Any other questions before we wrap this thing up?
You've already given away the prize.
Joe will come Monday, and he'll give away a Mercedes Maybach. Oh, Gopher tickets. There you go. Thanks to everybody for coming Monday night, 7 p.m., here again at Elsie's. Really hope that everybody listened to this podcast that didn't feel like it was necessary to get in your car and drive down to Northeast Minneapolis, that you grace us with your presence on Monday night. Don't you think, Anthony?
Absolutely. It'll be a great show. We'll have a couple of regular season NHL games that were covered in person.
And you know what'll be awesome about that one is we're going to dissect the first 2 games. We'll preview the next one. Anthony and I will talk. I'll tell you how much I always predicted that the third pair would be as outstanding as it was.
They're plus six after the 2-game sweep on the West Coast.
Jordy Benn game-winning goal in Anaheim. John Merrill game-winning goal in L.A. And I told you that's the way I do it. So thanks as always to our sponsors, Tria. Your guy,
Trio. My guys,
Profiled by Sanford, Minnesota Propane Association, Aquarius Home Services, your local authorized dealer for Connecticut water treatment, Kowalski's, Christendahl Real Estate, and of course, Elsie's. Thanks for having us again Monday night, 7 p.m. And here's Trampled by Turtles taking us out. So much coming out, there's nothing going on. Yeah, seriously, why don't you go take a walk, Anthony? Jeez.